It's really looking at it from the standpoint of being a human, right? And so when I look at a managerial role, very compliance driven, do as I say, here are the instructions, follow it, right? But then the 1-3% that we talk about is like just putting a little slap of humanity on top of it, right? So something as simple as, hey, I appreciate the work that you did. I can tell the effort that you put in. Doesn't take a lot, right? But what does it do? A, it acknowledges them. It respects their value. It shows them, hey, you can do it. And you're part of this team. You're additive to that standpoint. So when I think of that small incremental difference from a leadership standpoint, it doesn't take a lot. But I think what it does is that it has compounding effect.
Hello and welcome to the Leadership Launchpad, where we help technical managers improve themselves, their teams, and their organizations. On this show, I talk with industry leaders, coaches, authors, and experts to give you actionable insights to help improve your own performance and the performance of those around you. Our guest today is Rafael Villaruz. Rafael has worked in leadership roles for the past 20 years, 15 of those in healthcare. He's an organizational development expert who also teaches healthcare leadership, and his mission is to help people move from a manager mindset to a leader mindset. In today's discussion, you can expect to learn the difference between being a manager and a leader, what the Peter principle looks like in healthcare, how small differences can make all the difference as a manager, and why, if you want to be a successful leader, you need to stop doing. Now, before we get into that conversation, I do want to remind you that if this is your first time watching or listening to the show, make sure you subscribe so you never miss a future episode. And if you're already subscribed, then I ask that you would share this show with at least one other person. That, after all, is how we grow. I can't tell you how much it means to me. So with that, let's get into the discussion with Rafael Villaruz. Rafael, welcome to the Leadership Launchpad. How are you doing today, my friend?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Matt. Happy to be here. Sun shining. Can't complain whatsoever.
Excellent. I'm really excited to be talking to you today. This is the second podcast I've done talking to somebody in the healthcare space. And I think it's such an interesting space to be from because of just the high stakes and the high pressure. Obviously, the whole world is going through a lot of change. The healthcare industry in particular is going through a lot of change. And then the healthcare industry has this like pressure cooker effect of it's like very literally life and death in a lot of situations. So I think there's just lots of lessons that everybody from any industry can learn from this. You've been in healthcare for a long time. You've been in leadership for a long time. When we first chatted, you know, a month or so ago, one of the first places that we started our conversation was this idea of a difference between being a manager and being a leader. What does that look like from your perspective, from the healthcare space or just based on your experience?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I love that we kind of start here. And when I think of the difference between a manager and a leader, it really is the difference between like tactics and vision. Culture and compliance, right? And one of the things that I've also wrestled with, whether it's in healthcare or agnostic to healthcare, you can be a great manager and a great leader, but not all great managers are great leaders, right? And so when I look at this, especially from a healthcare perspective, I'm thinking of how we as leaders take care of people who care for people, right? And so when I look at that from a managerial perspective, it's the difference between inspiration and instruction, right? So I keep going back to this whole compliance thing because when I look at a manager, yes, there's regulatory standards in healthcare, there's compliance that we need to kind of make sure we check all the boxes. But at the same time, leaders are to elevate potential, right? And I think that's what we're there for. We're there to take care of people who are taking care of people.
I love that so much. I love that idea of, you know, I think as a leader, in order to find that vision, in order to find that inspiration, one of the most important things that you have to do is, you know, connect with some sense of mission, which in a lot of cases just means like having customer obsession, a customer focus, you know, understanding what the needs of the customer are. And it's so interesting, you know, the way you said it, it's just a customer obsession. It's just a customer mindset, but the difference is the way you're caring about that customer is actually taking care of them, you know? And so, but I love that idea of taking care of those who take care of others. And it's something that I think kind of, as you said, any leader in any place can understand of you're meant to take care of the people who actually get the stuff done, whatever the thing is that your company does, that's what you do. Going back to the beginning of that, what you were saying there, you know, you mentioned how there's, you know, you can be a great manager and you can be a great leader. Not all great managers are good leaders. I also think not all good leaders are good managers.
Absolutely.
You know, when you, is it a hard thing? I would think, because I talk a lot, I work a lot with new managers, people who mm-hmm. come up from, they are strong individual contributors. They're doing really great stuff. They become a manager for the first time. And helping them make that switch that exactly you talk about of instead of caring for others, you are taking care of those who care for others. Is that a difficult transition to make in healthcare? Because I would imagine, especially, I mean, there's lots of different disciplines. But how hard is that transition to make for a lot of people?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think people within healthcare, not to oversimplify it, but they make it harder than it is, right? So I'm going to go back to something you said. You talked about mission. You talked about the reason why people want to work in healthcare. And for as long as whether I teach, whether I'm at work, the sentiment is I want to help people, right? And so the foundation is there. But again, you're helping people in a very different way. And I think that's where the struggle is when you go from an individual contributor to a managerial or leadership role is you're still taking care of people, but your glasses changed. And some people aren't always mm-hmm. like accustomed to when those glasses do change. Because yeah, you can be working with someone on the bedside or rooming a patient. That's still the same thing that I'm doing as a leader. It's just, it doesn't look the same.
Yeah, it really is. And it's hard, I think, because I think the challenge is that in a lot of places, we just don't take a moment to explain to people the way this transition has happened. You grow up, you spend a whole career being taught that you need to be the best surgeon possible. You need to have the best bedside manner possible. You need to be the best nurse possible of, you know, taking direct care of your patients. And you get rewarded for that. And then you suddenly get given a new title and nobody takes the time to explain to you, okay, the way you help people now isn't by being the best surgeon. It's by helping others be the best surgeon. Absolutely. Do you have some real tangible examples of how you've seen people who can make that transition really make a difference?
Yeah. One example that I'm thinking of, and maybe I'll use the dichotomy of a bad example and a good example just to kind of paint that picture.
Yeah.
So let's start with the bad example first. There was a nurse that I got to work with. She promoted up to a manager. So think of an administrator over a large department. But one of the things that she did is she kept looking at it through a nursing lens, right? And so every problem was solved through the nursing lens. And that's not bad. But it's the flexibility or the adaptability of how you have to look at problems to solve them, right?
Okay.
You're not just being more prescriptive. You have to look at it from a very holistic or collective view, right? So she struggled in that. That took a lot. Her learning curve was a lot steeper than I think myself or even she thought as well too. But then let's look at the flip side of things. So when does it work well? When you have that sense of, hey, I'm gonna here to help people regardless if they're a manager, they're a nurse, they're a doc. And you can translate that because once you move into a leadership role or a managerial role, your freedom but the space you get to influence people is a heck of a lot different, right? And so to lean into that, I've seen people do really well because maybe they're not the doers per se, they're the influencers and not influencers in a social media way, but really the people who can navigate things. So I give those two examples to kind of show, well, if you kind of stick with what you know, what you learn, and aren't able to translate it or adapt it, then you kind of just fall short. So hopefully that kind of paints a picture of two different individuals.
I think so. I want to pull on a thread from that to see if I'm hearing something in there correctly. Because you know, you mentioned coming at everything from a nursing lens versus, you know, wanting to help a wide variety of people, it reminded me of Patrick Lencioni's Five Dysfunctions of a Team. And one of kind of the threads in that story is this idea that when you become a manager, though you are leading a team, your actual team really isn't the team you are leading anymore. Your team is like your peer managers in many ways, or like the whether it's other executives or whatever it is. And so I think one challenge, and again, this is the thread, and maybe I misinterpreted some of what you were saying, but it sounds like if you get promoted and continue to think of things through that nursing lens, one of the things that you're kind of doing is almost like protecting your team. You were a nurse. You want to look, you want to do things that are best for the nurses versus doing things that are now best for the system or for the broader community, maybe. Is that part of that shift that has to happen as well, where sometimes you're going to have to kind of be like, no, nurses, like, we're going to have to take one for the team today. Like, I know this isn't the best thing for us, but it is the best thing for everybody. And that's part of the transition they have to make as well.
Yeah. Oh, that's so good. I'll paint a picture and then we can see it. So when I think of moving in from an individual contributor to a managerial role, I look at like a hot air balloon, right? So like as you move up the hierarchy, you're slowly moving up, right? And one of the things that you just mentioned, if you're slowly moving up, but you're trying to solve everything from kind of that that technical lens, then you miss that opportunity, right? You miss the influence, you miss the systematic view, you miss you're in the weeds instead of the forest kind of thing, right? When you talk about it from even Lencioni, which is really funny, I actually just spoke to somebody about this, that whole first team mentality, right? I've always thought that you're the person and you make the teams that you're in. So you're the person that can bring that to a group, whether that's your peers, whether that's your directs, whether that's your leaders. And so I've struggled with that with Lencioni because of the fact that you have to be malleable at that point in time. And it's not static. So yeah, hopefully that, I think that you have it right on the nursing standpoint. And I think it's just kind of that hot air balloon. Like as you start to creep up, how do you look at it? What lens are you looking at it from?
Yeah. And what I hear that at the end also is that idea, that difference between manager versus leader, where when you are a leader, you are malleable. You're making teams wherever you go because that's what you do versus I'm the manager of this team. And this is where I'm at. That makes a lot of sense. Awesome. One of the other interesting things that came out of our last conversation was the idea of how much of a difference small differences can make. It's like the difference between being a, you know, 80% manager and an 82% manager isn't 2%, it's 20%. Or it's, you know, it's like, it's make these really big changes. It actually reminded me, you know, some people might maybe watching this on YouTube. I remember watching a video of Mr. Beast talking about just how important view duration and just quality of videos are, and how all the reward, there's outsized rewards for excellence, and that if you make a video 5% better, you get 50% more views. And you know, I know you're the one who kind of brought this up in our last conversation. I'd love to hear if there are specific examples of these small shifts making a big difference.
Yeah. I love that you mentioned Mr. Beast, because I think he's super smart when he looks at it from like an exponential viewership or whatever it may be. But when I think of, I'm going to go back to what I said earlier and then kind of link it, you know, in healthcare, we're leaders taking care of people who take care of people. Right. And so when I think of that 2%, 5%, whatever arbitrary number that we want to put in, it's really looking at it from the standpoint of being a human, right? And so when I look at a managerial role, very compliance driven, do as I say, here are the instructions, follow it, right? But then the 1-3% that we talk about is like just putting a little slap of humanity on top of it, right? So something as simple as, hey, I appreciate the work that you did. I can tell the effort that you put in. Doesn't take a lot, right? But what does it do? Yeah. A, it acknowledges them. It respects their value. It shows them, hey, you can do it. And you're part of this team. You're additive to that standpoint. So when I think of that small incremental difference from a leadership standpoint, it doesn't take a lot. But I think what it does is that it has compounding effects, right? And so what I look at it is, hey, you know, maybe I say something great one time, maybe I pat them on the back the next time. The next time when something needs to be constructed or feedback is given, then it's so much easier because that trust is there. So going back to Lencioni, right? Like Lencioni is a foundation of trust.
All about trust.
Those are little deposits into that trust. So I think of it from the standpoint of A, being a human, but also B, like I'm very big on giving flowers, giving recognition, giving praise on effort, right? Like outcome, sometimes we can't control that. But you can control your effort. So I'm going to make sure that I acknowledge that every step of the way.
Yeah. And I think this is a great example of us kind of what you mentioned earlier, overcomplicating things around what good leadership is. It's a big, heavy word that means all this stuff. And it's like, really? Like, I'm just supposed to like give some attaboys or just like say thanks? Like, that's all it takes? Like, yeah, that's kind of all it takes. I wanted to, in some ways, play devil's advocate to what you just said, or at least like imagine what I'm sure some pushback that you get on this stuff, because at least from what I understand of the medical world, you know, med school growing up, it's not easy. It's a lot, you know, I went through pilot training. Pilot training is supposed to be hard. It's supposed to be people yelling at you for some reason. I don't know why, but it's a lot of, there's a lot of meanness a lot of times. Do you, and so when I talk to people, and I've seen this with engineers as well, when you say, hey, it's about building trust, it's about welcoming people, it's about giving flowers, you know, giving acknowledgement, there's a lot of this, like I didn't get that when I was, that's stupid. Like, what are you talking about? Do you ever get that kind of pushback? And then if you do, how do you answer it?
Yeah, well, pushback for sure, 100%. Yes, because it is, it's incongruent, right? And I think that sometimes, at least in my experience, a lot of what I've tried to deal with, you can push back all you want, but you're a human at the end of the day. And so when I think about that, that commonality, that connection, even though that person's pushing back, they still want it. They just don't know how to say it. Right. Or maybe they've never experienced it in that sense. Right. And so when I look at the pushback, I would say two things. A, it's a challenge to figure out where can you find that commonality, but also two, it's to understand what is the lens that they're looking at it. Right. I get this all the time. We've tried this before. Didn't work in the past. Right. I just told this to somebody the other day when they said, hey, it didn't work in the past. And I was like, it's all timing. Right. Like Tesla may not have been great 15 years prior, right? But they're great because of all timing. And so when I think of change, when I think of leadership, I think it's also timing. Timing from when that person is open to you as a leader. But it's up to you as a leader to persevere and make sure that you can figure out what that commonality is. Is it hard? Absolutely. I think it's patience and time. But once you break that open, like we said, that trust is just abundant, and then you can build from there.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you're saying you've received pushback where I'm guessing you're talking to a leader who's working with a team or dealing with an individual, and you're saying, hey, why don't you try to do this kind of stuff? And their response is just like, we tried to do that before. And you're right. It is all about timing. There's all kinds of different reasons why something may or may not work at any given moment. And we all need to be prepared to, you know, that. And I think that persistence is a big part of building trust as well. You're showing that you as a leader are dependable on that. This is how you act. This is how you behave. This is how you're going to be doing things. Do you ever get pushback though, also from this from more of the idea of, no, it needs to be hard, or like, or like we're making people soft or something.
Like yeah. I want to mention one thing, and then I'll mention the whole soft thing as well too. I think from a healthcare standpoint, and I'm just looking at this industry specifically, you have to understand what is driving physicians, nurses, et cetera, right? Mm-hmm. They're there to help mm-hmm. people. But mm-hmm. I remember learning this in one of my first healthcare jobs. I was working with a surgeon and I was going through a ton of technical stuff. And he's like, I just care about the quality. And I was like, okay, so you care about how the patient is getting out of the operating room. That's all you care about, right? Mm-hmm. So taking that and plugging it into every single situation I'm in, I'm communicating that way now, right? If I'm with a physician, yeah. I'm getting pushback. You know what? I get it. I understand it didn't work in the past, but why didn't it work? Let's get down to the quality of it. So again, root cause, you're kind of pulling back the layers. So I just wanted to mention to that. And then I think from the soft standpoint, when I do get that, yes, I have my eyes rolling in the back of my head, but at the same time, I always look at it from, again, the people taking care of people, right? And so I know I've said this to some of my leaders in the past. It's like, hey, if you want me to be hard on this person, they're going to be hard on our patient. And then the patient's going to complain, and then it's still going to come back to me, right? And so I go back to this standpoint of, it's not that I'm soft. It's not that I'm hard. It's more so to the fact that I'm meeting that person where they need to be met at. And then they can take care of the patient. And so when you said this earlier, you were like, hey, this is kind of life or death. I use that to my advantage too, because that is the standpoint that I need. I need to create that environment. I need to make sure that that person feels safe so that they can safely take care of the patient.
Yeah, that just sparked in my mind. I bet you do, at least in some ways, have an advantage of, there's just across the whole medical industry, you know, the healthcare has been something that has been the focus for well over a decade of trying to improve quality, improve costs, improve efficiencies. And there's just so much data around it because it's life and death. Again, you know, going back to my experiences as a pilot, like, the nice thing about being an instructor pilot is it's a very binary situation lots of times. Like, you know, you're getting closer to crashing or farther away from crashing. You know, like, did the plane do what you wanted it to do? And how much do you get to take advantage of the fact that there have been there's so much data out there about what works and what doesn't? I'm thinking about, you know, how long it took the shift to happen, of, you know, getting checklists introduced into surgery. You know, are you able to take advantage of a lot of data out there, of research, of saying this kind of leadership or these actions as a leader will improve outcomes in a hospital?
Yeah, you know, it's funny that so everything within healthcare is all evidence-based, right? And so they always go back to, what does the literature say? And fortunately, I'm an education practitioner, and so I use that to my flavor as well too, right? And so when I go to them and I say, hey, I want to start talking about trust, I get the eye rolls. They're like, what are you doing, Raf? Like, why are you starting here? And I pull back everything. I'm like, well, this is what the literature says. This is what it is, et cetera. And I do that in the sense because I know my audience, right? And so that's important as well too from a leadership standpoint. But I want to mention something that you said about the binary standpoint of being in as a pilot. I also think that the diagnostic mindset of a physician and a nurse sometimes leads to data fatigue. And so what I'm saying about that is,
interesting,
I'll throw a ton of data and it's enough data to act. Yeah. But then I'm asked to, well, can we do more? Can we do more? Can we do more? Right. And what are my physicians doing? They're ruling everything out, right? It's not this, it's not this, it's not this. And so once they get to the, this is it, sometimes it's so late because they had to go through that sequence, right? And so one of the things that I at least try to do as a leader is influence them in the way that, don't worry about it. I went through all these checklists already because of the fact that I know you're looking at it from a diagnostic standpoint.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that's, you know, a perfect example of why it's so important to know your audience. You know, and I talk to a lot of HR professionals about some of the slight tweaks you need to make when dealing with engineers, when talking to technical people, because it's not quite a diagnostic mindset, but it is very similar. You know, they're very rooted in the data and understanding what is the data telling us and letting that kind of lead us. I would be interested, how much do you get because of the nature of things, because of the nature of the healthcare industry, that diagnostic sense of we always want to make sure we're, you know, getting rid of all the possible options. Do you get a lot of opportunity to kind of experiment with this kind of stuff? Because that is one benefit in that, you know, it isn't, when it comes to leadership, you know, any one engagement isn't life or death in a sense. How much room do you get for that?
Yeah, it's a good question. In my current role, so I get to work in what we call health innovation. So think of innovation in the standpoint of how you as a patient receive care. And I'm fortunate right now to be in a team that focuses all on testing. And so we test, cool. We fail quick, and we move, right?
Yeah.
But I would say the majority of the industry is allergic to this, right? Because it's sure. Like, yeah. Well, let's just fix. Let's fix. Let's move. Let's fix. But it's like, wait. Going back to human-centered design, which is something that needs to be infused into healthcare, and I'm starting to see it just gain ground now. The piece of testing sometimes doesn't get, I guess, the benefit of the doubt or highlighted because of the fact that, well, we're saving patients' lives. It's going to affect patients, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah. Let's re-engineer it, right? So from a human-centered design point, our patients are telling us what they need to happen. Our physicians are saying what they're struggling with. So if we know those two pieces and we build from there, it's a lot different than just seeing a problem and just slapping a Band-Aid on it. So I'm fortunate in my position that I'm able to do it. However, I would say the industry at large sometimes has a challenge with it because they focus on the outcome, right? And they want an immediate outcome. But sometimes, you know this, change takes a while. So I would say right now I'm in a good position to do it. At the same time, that's not without struggles and trying to influence people who want it done faster.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about a lot of different principles, a lot of different pieces of the healthcare industry, a lot of different parts of your role. I'd love to kind of like bring it together because to finish out with maybe some practical things that people can walk away mm-hmm. with. Because as you said, you just said, you know, you're in a space that's very innovative focused. You're testing, you're trying out a lot of new things. You're working with lots of people in a high stakes situation where you're trying to figure out how people can be better leaders in order to influence positive outcomes for customers. What are some of the things that you have seen working? These are highly technical people, highly technical fields. When people get promoted into becoming a people leader for the first time, what are some of the main techniques that you tell people to help them be successful?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I think the first one that comes to mind is try to stop doing. And so what I mean by stop doing is when I go back to my nursing, right? I'm going to fix it like a nurse, right? If I'm an analyst, I'm going to fix it with a spreadsheet, right? But when you move into a leadership position, you're handicapping, you're paralyzing your team because you do it. So that's the first thing. But I'm going to kind of wrap something else into it. So I think the last time we talked about power, right? And so when I think of this, I think of giving power away. And it's counterintuitive because, you know, when you move into a leadership position, the manager title, you're hoarding, like, oh, I want all the power.
Exactly. My empire.
Exactly, right? We don't need any fiefdoms here, right? And I think that is really another thing that I tell new leaders is counterintuitive, but the more power you give, the more power you gain, right? And so when I think of power, it doesn't necessarily have to be promote everybody, right? I think of power perspective. So making sure you tap into all your folks and gain that, right? Like how impactful is that? Oh my goodness, my manager asked for my perspective on how to solve a problem. Super empowering there. And then I even think from the standpoint of powers, everyone on your team is an expert, but you need to figure out what that expert is or their expertise is. And when I look at practical tips, that in and of itself, number one, stop doing. Like that is really, really hard, but it's also giving power to your team and then also to tapping into their power, not power in the work that they do, but the perspective that they look at, whatever their expertise is. And then from there, going back to what we talked about, you're forming all that trust. And once you have all that trust, your team is mm-hmm. solid. So that would be one yeah. practical tip that I tell new leaders.
I love that. And it's kind of like, it's almost like a 3-point process, you know, where it's like, first, it's just like, okay, do it, realize that it's not your responsibility to get everything done now. So that means, but stuff still has to get done. So you have to let the people on your team do it. In letting them do it, you should be trying to figure out who's best at doing different things. What do they prefer? What are their strengths? What are their weaknesses? So you can get to know how to kind of employ them better. And then while that's happening, you're clearly getting to know them, get them to know you, so you can build that foundation, build that trusting relationship with them. I love that. I love that kind of those three tiers.
And I just want to add one thing to this. So I forget where I read it, but it was something along the lines that, you know, give your employees the benefit of the doubt that they actually want to do good work, right? And so think of that, everyone wants to do good work, but what the challenge is you're measuring every single person on the same exact scale. And that's not the way to do it as a leader, because Matt, maybe you're in aerospace, right? So you have the engineering mindset. Maybe I'm in operations and maybe I like the workflows, et cetera, et cetera. But if you give us the same test, you may do better on one and I may do better on the other. But then it doesn't play to our strengths. And I think that's a fallacy in leadership. It's, you can't solve everything with kind of just like a blanket. You really have to look at it individually.
Yeah, I mean, that reminds me of this story that I tell to everybody, so I'm probably overtelling it, but I had these two instructional designers on my team where they had the same role. They're both instructional designers. One was very like production focused, just like she was one of the most productive instructional designers I've ever worked with, shipping product all day long. But she did that because she was excellent at knowing good enough, right? Like what is good enough, and we call it done. Another person was very detailed focused, where every, you know, it was not good enough. It was done, you know, right? It was like, make sure every single thing is correct. And to your point, if I was grading them both on either of those scales, then then the other person would have been falling short, right? One of them always would have been falling short depending on what scale I used. But the thing is me as a manager of a team, I needed both skills. I needed the pairing of them is what made our team successful. I think understanding that, and probably what most often happens is the manager comes in and they just use whatever scale they judge themselves by.
Correct.
And that's what they do apply to everybody, and they try to make everybody like them. And that's where there's a big failing.
I don't know if this analogy just rang when you were saying it, like, you know, old shows like Voltron or like Power Rangers, right? Like they all come together and they make that super huge machine, right?
Yeah.
And as corny as that sounds, like that's the truth of it, because, you know, whatever, same Power Rangers, right? Like you have one that's a T-Rex and then one that's a saber-toothed tiger, right? Two totally different, but complementary. They make something beautiful, right? And so you as a leader need to really acknowledge, when is it that you need them and what is their special sauce?
Yeah, always leave it to children's shows to find the true root of what makes us human and what we need to succeed. I'm a deep believer in that.
Absolutely. Well, love it.
This has been great, Raphael. I've learned a lot from this. I think we've given some people some real actionable things that they can take away in terms of how can I improve as a leader. So I really want to thank you for your time. I thought this was a great conversation. And how should people get in touch with you? How can people follow you?
Yeah. And first off, thank you for having me. This was an awesome conversation, super energizing, and really just the dialogue just gets, you know, the brain flowing. And really for people to find me, you can RaphaelVillaruz.com. I'm sure that'll pop up on either the podcast or the YouTube video. Also active on LinkedIn as well too. So follow me there, and that's how they can find me.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much and have a great rest of your day.
Appreciate you, Matt. Take it easy.
Thank you so much for listening to today's show. If you are looking for help turning your organization's great engineers into great managers, me and my team at Better Everyday Studios would love to help. We deliver targeted and interactive training workshops that are designed to help build the three fundamental skills of any new manager: building trust, giving feedback, and setting goals. Reach out to me through matt@bettereverydaystudios.com so we can start making your organization better every day.